Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome to episode 265 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast, the last episode of 2017. We have a fantastic guest returning to the show today. Before we dive into the interview, thank you so much to Paragon City Games for your support. Connecting with you this year has been an absolute blast. I look forward to many more connections and moving forward and doing more fun things together. Prodigies, you can visit them at ParagonCityGames.com. And of course, patrons, thank you, thank you, thank you. Without you, then this show literally would not happen, and I cannot express enough my gratitude for your support this year, and I look forward to placing a bigger emphasis on you, on the patrons, next year in the new revamped tiers and goal list and what I really want to put out and give back to you for your support. So thank you so much for all your support and your patience as we've grown the show and have just learned and grown together. So thank you so much, patrons. If you, of course, are not a patron yet and you want to be, you go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon. So, like I mentioned, the last show of the year, here we are with a returning guest. I can't wait to bring him in. Sit down, so let's do so and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest returns to the podcast now with 8 Grand Prix top 8s, including a win at GP Lyon. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome back the one, the only, Christopher Larson. Christopher, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, man, we're so happy to have you back. Are you ready to delve into your mind again and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Excellent. Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Christopher, he is not on Twitter yet, but he did say if he ever wins a GP, he will get on Twitter. So that is going to happen soon. Until then, Facebook is the best place to find him, and that is how you can reach out to him. And of course, if you notice, I said welcome back to the show. Christopher Larson is actually returning after a year and a half. He was first on in July of 2016. He was episode 114, and then I reran his intro episode after he made top 8 recently. So he's also episode 254. But this is going to be new content. We're going to talk about what Christopher's been up to since then, because since I reran the episode 254, he's been on fire doing lots of other great things and great finishes. So we're going to dive into that. So, Christopher, are you still in the Navy? Last time we talked, you were doing the Navy.
I am still there. I'm actually shipping out next week.
Oh, you are? For how long?
5 weeks.
Okay.
All over Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, man. What's up with that?
It's great.
You like that?
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. I've been home for Christmas the last 4 years, so I guess it's my turn.
Okay. Well, that's very chivalrous of you. And you still cook?
I still cook.
Okay, cool. I remember last time that's what you did. So pretty good stuff. Since then, actually, so last time we talked, I was in active duty Navy for the United States. And since then, I've gotten out. I'm in the reserves now. Right. So I still, I did active duty for 7 years. And as of this year, I do the reserves. So that's kind of fun to get a little update on us sailor boys. So
it is.
So in the last year and a half, let's just dive into what you've been up to, because obviously, you know, you're in the Navy, which means you're in and out doing Navy stuff. But I mean, wow, in the last, especially the last couple of months, you've just been on a tear and doing a great job. And so let's really dive into what the last year and a half has been like for you. So can kind of fill us in on what you've been up to and Magic related. What are some of the things that you've been doing?
I think I started playing more Magic actually right after a round when we did the podcast last time and afterwards. I joined Team Genesis because a lot of my friends were there from prior travel and stuff like that. So while they made Team Genesis last year, I was not on the Pro Tour team, but I was playing with the guys and testing with them. And then they made Team Revelation this year, and I joined in with some of the others. It's been great. So we traveled the States for a month, went to 4 different cities, played 4 different tournaments, and the first 2 didn't go well, but the last 2 then went fine. And so on.
Excellent.
But just a lot of sailing and a lot of Magic.
So yeah. So last time I had you on after, you know, GP top 8, and then because of that, you got onto Team Genesis. Is that why?
No, Genesis was like many of the old Team Eureka.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which I was on in the end. And then they changed the whole system and everything. And Genesis formed up with some of the late Eureka members.
Got it.
And I joined them because of them. There's some of the Danes, and some of the Danes were, and I started playing on Team Eureka afterwards, which is prior to something else. And when they messed up and went their separate way, they asked me if I would be with them, not on the team, because they were already set for six people.
Right.
But, and I was not even, I think I was silver maybe not even. Probably, yeah, I probably made silver. I had one invite and then I played with them. And I played 3 out of 4 last season.
Excellent.
It didn't go to Hawaii because I was on active duty.
Mm. So what was it like being on the team? Like, how often do you guys play? Was it really formal, or is that only before the Pro Tour that they get really formal? Like, what's it like being on a team like that?
It's mostly for the Pro Tour with the formal stuff. Like, we get in like a week before the GP, like Monday before the GP, prior to the PG.
Mm-hmm.
Then we just rent a house and play a lot of Magic, and it's actually less formal than people probably would expect.
Hmm.
It's just a lot of joking, and it's just nice being around guys you actually like instead of like having to play a lot of things. Obviously, people test a lot of Magic online when the set come out early and stuff like that, but next PT is going to be Mutton, so it's going to be a lot of limited because you can test Mutton prior.
Yeah. What do you feel has been your biggest improvement in the last year and a half?
Probably testing with all the Americans and stuff like that, listening a little bit to what they say. Like, they play American GPs and we play the European scene. It's a little different, but still the same game. Just listening to other people's thoughts, like, obviously stuff like Brad Nelson is a really good standard. Seth Manfield just won the Pro Tour. And having those guys read your mind and the other way you can read their mind, it's just one hell of a thing to have.
Yeah, that's neat. So what is different about American GPs versus European GPs? So he says same game, so I understand there's going to be a lot of similarities, but are there nuances that you picked up on?
There's just a meta game. It's a little different depending on if you're in the States or in Europe. And just the player plays differently. It's hard to explain, but it's hard to see if you don't see it, actually, but you know it's there. It's like if you go somewhere and the climate is the same, but you can feel it's different.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. That little nuance, a little underbelly. That's neat. That's neat. Or undercurrent, I should say. So great. So being able to rub shoulders with and play with really good players has been, you know, your biggest growth you feel in the last year and a half.
It's just playing more Magic and playing on the higher scene. Like, I've played Pro Tour for a while, but just trying to make more of it and play more Magic. Like, this time I'm home for 7 weeks and I went basically traveling 6 days after I got home, and it was only the last weekend off. Otherwise it's been Magic, which is great.
That's neat. Just,
the way to get better at Magic is just play more Magic, more or less.
And are you playing a lot of Magic online, or is it mostly off paper for you?
I'm playing mostly online.
Okay.
Unless it's a big tournament. Even for the big tournament, we play a lot of online because you can get in more games. You don't have to do the shuffling. And
yeah.
You don't have to find the cards all the time. It's horrible. I'm sitting here about to make Mutton decks for the weekend. Then we're going to GP Madrid.
Yes.
And I have so many cards. And they are everywhere.
And they're not organized?
Yeah. They're not that organized as well, at least.
What has been your favorite place to travel to in the last year and a half?
I think I like the States. Actually, traveling to Australia last year was also great.
Cool.
I wanted to go to Australia. But we actually decided on living like 1.5 hour away from Sydney in like some suburban where there was nothing. So it was a great hangout with the guys, and it was like summertime in Europe, like July, August. And that is just not summertime in Australia.
Nope.
So it was just, the weather was not, it was a little cold and the house was not that warm. And
oh man.
And we were not in the city. Like we rented some cars and we had to drive like an hour to get to a shopping mart, and then drive in the different side of the road. And
oh wow. It sounds like an adventure.
It was kind of an adventure. Also, I was not the guy driving. So I was, Brad Nelson was driving at that point, and I was like, it was just multiple situations where you think you're going to die sitting next to Brad Nelson because he was keep turning a little bit more to the left all the time and hitting like brushes and bushes. It was great.
Oh my goodness.
It was definitely a thing.
Oh, that is so fun. So you traveled to the States, traveled to Australia, and you said, so you came to the States for like a month and did four events here, or you went to four cities here, you said?
Yeah, we played the GP in Phoenix, the Pro Tour in Albuquerque, and then the GP Atlanta, and then in Portland.
Wow. That's a lot of fun. And so when you go on a big trip like that, how – give us some travel tips. Like, I mean, how did you guys figure out where to stay and, all, you know, how to get around and all that stuff?
Well, my travel trip is the worst travel trip ever. It's just like I'm always at sea, so I always just find – actually, it might be the best. Find someone who's going to book the travel for you.
Ah, I like it. There you go.
The only flight I booked for that trip, and we flew to all the cities, was the flight to Phoenix and home from Portland. Mm-hmm. All the other trips, like Seth booked my plane ticket to Albuquerque, and another day he booked all the tickets and all the Airbnbs when we were traveling around the States.
Cool. So it was Airbnb that you guys did and then just split it?
Yeah, we basically Airbnb most places.
Yeah, super smart. That's really cool.
It's a better place to stay. You get a bigger apartment and more place to like table place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so true. Hotels. Yeah.
Basically, only stay hotels for the weekend up to the PT was the only place we stayed at.
Okay.
Otherwise, we rented as well with the team.
That's cool. So what has been your most fun event to participate in? Which one did you like the most?
Japan was really good because even though I missed gold by 3 points, losing the last two rounds, but Japan is just a special country. But I'm just going to say, like, Albuquerque, Seth winning the PT was insane.
Yeah. I love that too. Like, I think Seth is an amazing guy, like a great player, awesome dad. And like, you know, we had him on the show too. And I love that guy. So to see him win, that meant, I don't know, I was really happy for him. I thought it was great.
Seth winning the PT and being there to celebrate it afterwards and getting to pick him up when he won the PT, finally do it right. Always, every time someone wins the PT, it's always like people trying to pick them up and like trying to carry them. And I figured I would just do it better than everyone else. We threw Seth in the air and it was just a great moment. You could see how happy Seth was winning that. And we were like, yeah, he's been a world champion. He's won multiple GPs and now he had multiple top eights as well. And him winning this just, it was an insane moment to be there with him, also for the team, seeing how glad everyone was for him.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really, really neat. And so here we are, end of the calendar year, not the season, rather. What events do you have coming forward, or looking forward, rather?
We're going to Madrid this weekend.
Okay.
We're going, leaving at 7 a.m. tomorrow. And that is going to be the last for this year, and I think the first one for me next year is going to be GP London.
Okay. That's the week January, right?
Yeah, I think it's January 26th or something. Okay.
And then right after that, the Pro Tour?
And then it's the Pro Tour.
Excellent.
Actually, we have a kind of busy schedule next year, as far as I remember.
Oh, good.
With the Navy and with the Magic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And that's neat that you have it all, you know, figured out. And you have to because of the Navy, so that's really neat. So let's see. As of right now, how many pro points do you have?
As of right now, I have 20.
Nice. Very nice. And there's still several events left in the season, so that's really good.
Actually, it's pretty insane. Like, I locked up silver by winning the GP, which locked me for all the PT this season, actually.
Ah, oh, so awesome, which will give you 3 points each just for showing up. So that's really fun.
Yeah, that's 29 already. I missed gold by 3 points last year, having a GP slot I didn't use, actually, because I didn't play that many GPs. Mm-hmm. And then I lost back-to-back winning in for gold at the PT. Hmm. One to Calcano and then one to some Hong Kong guy. Where Calcano, he had really good draws all three games, and I had good draws, and I had a Bowman career with six cards under that just showed me five lands and a Falcon Wrath.
Oh, man.
that was devastating.
Oh, man. And so let's see. So I know bronze is 10 and silver is 20. Gold is 35?
Yeah.
35. Okay. Yeah. 35. Excellent. Well, man, it seems like a pretty good setup this year for that. That'll be fun.
That would be great, yeah. That was the goal for last season, I guess, but Brian Joanto, it's definitely the goal for this season.
Excellent. So diving into some of your events specifically, let's go into, you know, how you, you know, how you chose your decks, how you prepared for them, and then maybe some highlights on what you learned from those experiences. So let's just go back to your, I guess, first most recent top eight, and tell us, you know, remind us of the event and what you played and all that good stuff.
We played actually the Danish guys, all the Danes at the European tournaments. Say all the Danes, we were free traveling around. I played the PT winning deck at the Pro Tour.
Okay.
The same deck as Seth played, and I went 0-4 in the last four rounds when I was 3-1.
Bummer.
Well, it happens. I didn't have great draws, and I got. But in the end, it was just I didn't want to play Long Touch Cup actually. Long Touch Cup is really good in this format, and I think we played the best Long Touch Cup deck at the PT for that with the snakes. But I felt like every time I sat down and played a game with Long Touch Cup, I end up losing for opponent having multiple removals.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just like, I feel like I would have won every match I played if I didn't play Long Touch Cup in my deck. If I had played some more going big kind of way. And then we played the Gunty four color energy with the Danes, and they were like, they played something like that, a more bigger version at the PT. And I think Raska is just a ridiculous magic card.
Yeah?
Raska is just so good. Actually, the thing I want to do most in this format is play turn one Attune, turn two Glintsleeve, turn three Roller Rejoices, turn four Chander, and then have Raska's Contempt in backhand. But the mana just can't support it.
Oh.
I really tried. I tried to make that work.
It's just possible. Bouncing around too much.
It's just, you're going to press your mana way too much. So we had to settle with either playing Restless Contempt or Chandra, and I settled on Contempt because Contempt was really good. Mm-hmm. And then we just played that deck, and I actually didn't test it much for the first EP. Danes just played, I was like, sure, I'll play it, whatever. Didn't feel like that much. And then I went X3 and became 14th at GP Atlanta. And then actually the week after when we went to Borderlands, the reason why I played my deck, I even wrote it in my sub 8 profile thing, is just it was already sleep.
Oh, really? That's yeah. Why? It's just like, oh, I already have this one.
I played so much standard already. The only thing I did that week was play Commander 1-1 leagues and play Iconic Masters Draft on Friday.
Oh, nice.
While the other guys are sitting there. Basically, we just, the weather in Portland was not great the first couple of days we were there. We kind of in Tuesday, and Tuesday and Wednesday it was really bad. So we had a rented a basement in an Airbnb, and we just sat around, watched Netflix and played Magic Online. It was great.
That's awesome. How is Iconic Masters? Quick tangent.
I liked it in the beginning. I'm happy it's gone. Mm-hmm. The value is just not that great, but I like every draft format that is new, basically.
Okay.
I love Limited.
But you said the value was not that great?
No, the value in this set was the packs was not worth enough.
Interesting. So really expensive packs and not a lot of payoff.
Now, even like I played several drafts, and it was the it was the 3-1 switch. And even if you went 2-1, you got two packs, and it was not worth it.
Got it. Did you get any sweet pulls and any cool cards from Iconic Masters?
I got all of them, I think.
Yeah, you got all of them. Good for you.
Mana drain, everything. Like, if you realize, it would have been a lot better.
Oh, that's fun. All right, so back onto the GP train and whatnot. So the way that you chose your deck was you already had it sleeved up, and that was a standard tournament, right?
Yeah.
So what were some walk us through that event? What were some of the highlights that pop out to you, and some of the things that you learned?
In doing that tournament, there was a lot of the WotC guys over there.
Okay.
And I had a talk with Andrew Brown telling me about that, why not Teemo and why everything. He liked my deck and everything. He's just like, but isn't Hydra just, you're going to lose to Hydra? And actually, one of the reasons why we picked that deck in the beginning was Teemo could cut down on the Hydras in the deck. So they played less bristling Hydras. Mm-hmm. And I played 9 Teemo guys during that tournament. And only one guy went turn 4 Hydra against me.
Wow.
Which was probably a reason why I kept winning against the team. And also people thought it weird because the team match, everyone went up to 4 of the clone guy. the multiple phases, many phases this year. The guy's just not that good against us. It's fine, but everybody tried to win, go bigger. So we could just board out all of their four fatal push and just don't care.
Interesting.
And our deck just goes bigger on like we have nickel bolas and stuff in the board. It was just great.
And so why are people cutting the Hydras?
No, people cut Hydra because it's not good. It's like you want to be more proactive than you want to have to. People went back up to four again now.
Mm.
But some people were down to playing two in their lists.
Interesting.
For a reason that I cannot remember. Explained. Yeah. It's just...
Interesting. And I love how you said, there's a bunch of the WotC guys at GP Portland. Like, I had to talk to Andrew Brown. I was like, that's so crazy. Like, I had Andrew Brown on the show, you know, back in the day, and now he's a WotC guy. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, I was really good. Like, Majors was on the team, like Genesis. And I like Majors a lot. I stayed at his place, one of the PTs, for a week, basically just drafting and hanging out. And he's really good with friends with Andrew Brown, so I met him through him.
That's really cool.
But Andrew's really good and like really nice guy. All the WotC guys.
Yeah.
Met them. They also hired a bunch of new guys.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Majors is a WotC guy now too. So.
Yeah. He left us. He left us for WotC.
Man, that's so funny. It's so cool kind of just seeing the progression of players and, you know, some of them go and end up working at Wizards, and it's just a lot of fun to see. So it's really neat. All right, cool. So what was your... what was your result over at GP Portland?
I became fifth.
Yeah. How'd that feel?
Yeah. It felt good.
Yeah.
I was 13-0.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
And then I didn't play Magic for like, when I was 13-0, I didn't play Magic for 2.5 hours. I faced Shahar, which is a good friend of us and the Danes in general. So I conceded to him so he would make top 8 as well. And he ends up winning the GP, which is great. Even better for that.
That's awesome.
And then I drew in the last round with the guy asking, like, would you like to make top 8? And he was like, I've never been top 8 before. Sure, I'll draw with you. Because I had no intention. I drew in first seat, so I had no intention of trying to knock someone else out. Like, I would have played if Corey had a chance to get in, but he didn't.
Okay. So you were 13-0, and then ID, which is intentional draw, both round 14 and 15?
No, I scooped.
Oh, yeah, you just said that. So you scooped to Shahar, so he got the win, and then the 15th round, what'd you do?
I drew.
You drew that one, okay.
Yeah. And then I played some mono-red guy in the sub-8. It was actually one of the worst moments I had in Magic.
What happened?
In game 3, when I play against him, he's not drawing his fifth land. I'm mulliganed, and I'm pretty sure he has a Glorybringer in hand. And then he's like, he draws his card, and he thinks. So I'm like, all right, he drew the land. He keeps thinking. I'm like, all right, I guess he didn't draw the land. Then he thinks again, and he's like, he plays the desert that shoots for one. And if he had the Glorybringer in hand, it is the best draw he could ever make.
So he
plays the desert because I had a Rasker where basically if he plays Glorybringer and exert it, he's going to kill my whole board, and he doesn't have to attack my Rasker because he can shoot it for one as well with the land. But the whole turn of him playing the Glorybringer, shooting my Redcan, attacking and killing my dude, took him 3.5 minutes. And the thing I hate most in Magic is slow rolling.
Mm.
It is the one thing everybody I know is just like, people I play in local tournaments, they slow roll me just because they know how much I hate it when we're playing for like just a pack or something.
Oh, come on. That's terrible.
I get the joke of it, but this was like, and doing that, Courage, like the chat went mad at me because I got mad. I was just telling him, what the hell, man? And when he played the Glorybringer, after those 3 minutes thinking, he went thinking again. I can't explain you how bad I felt sitting there. Just like, all right, if you don't have Glorybringer, I'll probably win this game. Like, but if you play the Glorybringer, I would probably lose. And the whole sequence took him 4 minutes to get there. It was unbearable to sit. I was so mad, actually.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be really frustrating. But maybe he just didn't see the line of play and it just took him longer to get there than you?
Like I talked to him afterward. I was trying to explain. He was just like, I just really wanted to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that you want to be sure, but like the time it took him to do it, I was tapped out. I had no cards in hand.
Oh, yeah.
I was
okay.
Completely F6.
Okay.
And yeah. Everything was on board. It's like he could have played the Glorybringer and just like, all right, I got this. Let me think it through.
Mm-hmm.
Like his hand was, when he drew the card, his hand was two Hatchet and a Glorybringer. So it was obviously, there's nothing else, whatever was going to happen.
Because mm-hmm. didn't, when Seth won the Pro Tour, there was like a lot of thinking that he went through kind of at the end too. And it was one of those just kind of making sure things as well, right? So
yeah, exactly.
It happens.
Obviously, also, but Seth like put it down there. So like, you can also see when Seth wins, it's Pascal getting up, hugging Seth. When Seth is like, "All right, what's gonna happen? This is weird. What is going on?"
Mm-hmm.
And it was just Pascal telling him, "Man, you got this. Congratulations, you won it."
Got it. Yeah.
Seth was ordering bloggers. It was
yeah. And you're right though. Like, yeah, when for example, you said you were completely tapped out. I've been in situations like that too, and. Yeah, so every situation is different, and so sometimes something like that, I get kind of like, come on, like also, like especially when either I'm all tapped out or like when they are completely tapped out, you know, and like have nothing, I'm like, what are you waiting for? Like just pass priority, you know, like stuff like that really kind of drives exactly. me nuts.
It's so. Just like, and I was just like, it was obviously frustrating sitting there in the moment. After, oh man, that's right. I was like, it was just really hard to sitting there and watching yourself die and you're not. Making the play and like yeah. taking so long.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a nice guy. He was his first top 8, I think, as well, or something. Like he hadn't played for a long time. And in the end, it was all good. Like I was annoyed in the moment, but I got over it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat. All right. So, grabbed 5th, you said, at GP Portland. So then what happened next? Where to next?
We went to Lyon.
Nice. Tell us about that.
We started 0-2.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a start.
Yeah. We went from having our pools. Actually, we were making the decks. And I had, like, we were sitting talking about it and ended up making a green, red, white dino deck I played with, like, 3 Sun's Avatars. The red one, the black, the green one, and the multicolor one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and Bundy played a red, black pirate deck. And Thomas played a Merfolk deck.
Okay. And so how did you guys choose those decks?
It's like, it was just obviously for the cards. Like, it was not obvious, but that was like, I talked to some of the people playing the World Magic Cup here afterwards, after winning the GP, and they were all like, what is the secret to playing Sealed? Team Sealed, I was like, just play your cards. I don't know. We didn't test one Sealed.
Hmm.
But I played a lot of drafts, obviously, to the PT and everything, but that's about it.
So,
like, you can sit down and test it that much.
Yeah, so, just walk us through, what format was GP Lyon?
It was the Ixalan Team Sealed.
And so, Team Sealed, how is that? Isn't it, you open, like,
12 packs?
12 packs? You open 12 packs, and then out of those 12 packs, you make 3 decks, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. And there's no restrictions as to copies of cards in one deck versus another, right? It's not unified or anything.
No, it's just that you can build, like, you have all the cards and you don't even have to use all the cards. You
right.
can just sign up whatever you want.
Right. So you use 12 packs to make 3 sealed, 3 40 card decks, and then you just play those. Okay, cool. And so you went with a Naya Dinosaur, and then you guys also had a Black Red Pirates and then a Merfolk deck, green blue. Okay, cool.
Basically, so, playing all the colors best we could.
Cool. Yeah, we just, playing all the colors. Got it. Okay.
Like, we started off playing the first round against some Swedes we know, Elias Watzfeldt and his team. And we just died.
Hmm.
Like, actually, one of the best moments in this tournament was when Bundy lost his match in 2 minutes.
What?
Like, I had a fairly quick game one.
Uh-huh.
And Bundy says, I'm just looking at how you do. I'm like, I lost. Like, game one, I lost the match.
In
like,
2 minutes?
How do you lose the match? He just mulliganed to oblivion, and the other guy just killed him turn 4.
Oh. Oh my gosh, that's nuts. Yeah, that's a start.
But when we were 0-2, we were just like, all right, should we just quit? Or what are we doing? And we were just like, nah, let's just play. Like, even like, we want to make day 2. Like, we're staying 2 Danish teams together, and the other guys were also 0-2. So this is not fun sitting there at the moment, but in the end, it turned out great. We won the next 7 rounds in day 1, playing multiple good teams, actually. from playing some of the pro teams. We faced Hain.
Mm-hmm.
Reed Duke, and I can't remember who the last one was.
some big teams.
No, American Limited Master, all the Hall of Fame. Jesus.
That's awesome. So
we lost the finals in GP Atlanta.
Oh, Stark? Ben Stark?
Yeah, Ben Stark, exactly, yeah. I was about to say Sam Black, but I knew that was not the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we faced them, and we faced Joel Oz and his team and everything, like, and Miller, that I'm going to team with this weekend. This is great. I like team tournaments is the greatest kind of magic, actually. Team draft is what I do regularly, and I do it at home in the store.
Why do you like it so much?
I like drafts a lot, and I just like team anymore, even more. I think just the fact that, like, I always played handball as a kid, and team sports is just great. Everything with team is just better.
Cool.
I think.
Were you on the World Magic Cup team?
No, I was not. Miller was the captain, and I didn't even play nationals.
Okay.
Because I was at sea.
You're at sea. Okay.
Yeah. It was great. But Deep and Young was, there was so many good moments. Actually, we won a game at our match where Thomas won in the fifth extra turn.
That's exciting when it comes down to that.
But the worst part is, like, Thomas, the other guy passes the turn when there's 13 seconds left on the clock. So in that turn, we have to attack and play two Murphos. And one of them was the wine slide that put counters on two Murphos. The worst part is when Thomas draws his first card, the first thing he does is he's flicker his cards and thinking about what to do. And I was about to explode out of my own shell. What are you doing? So we swung, and the other guy quickly blocked. And then when he played the Murphos, he was just thinking, like, flicking his cards once more. I just slammed dice on him and said go. And the other guy exactly managed to untap as time was called. And we won in the fifth extra turn, like, really close.
Got it. Yeah, got it. So you wanted to finish the turn and pass so that the clock ended on your opponent's turn, so then you guys would get the extra turn.
It was
got
important
it.
For us
yeah,
to get
okay.
that.
Okay.
We were never losing this game, but we were not winning in two turns.
Got it.
We needed
the third one. Okay. and so Thomas is flicking his cards. You're like, stop it. Just play. Go.
No. Thomas is just like, he's just taking a chill, like, thinking about his options and everything. Not doing anything rushed.
Oh, man. That's funny. That's funny. What were some of the other highlights? Some of the other matches that were big for you guys?
Facing the other Danes in the finals was great as well.
Yeah?
Yeah, like both that and in the quarterfinals, in the semifinals, I was pretty sure I was going to lose my game. My opponent played a blue-red, splashing Carnage Tyrant and Settle the Wreckage.
Mm.
And in game three, I'm drawing my first seven of my first eight draws were lands in my red, blue,
oh
red, or red,
my
red, white,
gosh.
Red, white, aggro deck. And I end up winning by playing two Cupboard Wings and just attacking and hoping he didn't have anything, and he didn't.
Wow.
It was pretty sick.
Yeah.
I was so sure we lost that game. And then we got to face the other Danes in the finals. That was great.
The other team that started off 0-2 was in the finals?
No, they started off way better, though.
Oh, okay. But
it was also, they were X-2 after day one as well, I think, for sure. And this is like, this is the guy, one of them, the guy I was facing, I was sitting in the middle, Casper, is a guy I've played Magic with since I was 12.
Wow. That's cool.
It was actually pretty cool also facing those guys. Just having, like, I'm not going to say grudge match because that's not what it was, but it is those guys I play Magic with down in my local store sometimes.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
And we also team draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
so having a bigger team draft there, it was kind of great.
Man,
and in the end, we got out victorious, which was even better.
So what are some team draft tips for us, because not everyone has done that, and so it's while it is played, you know, GPs and stuff like that, not everyone's super familiar with it. So, just what are some insights or tips you have about team draft?
One of the tips I have is that team draft is about one thing. It's about making sure that the guy you're passing to doesn't get a great deck, basically, while okay. getting like it's something called hook and cut. Like if you're sitting after me and I can get pass you two red cards and then I'm just going red myself, it's really hard actually to be good at team draft. I think Ben Stark obviously is one of the great players as well, talking about a lot of, I think he wrote articles around it as well. But it's just about making sure that your deck is better than the guy you're passing to, more or less. And never passing any bombs.
Okay.
That is probably the most important rule. Like, you can pass something really good if you're 100% the guys not playing it.
Okay.
Like, at the finals, I passed a Sanctum Seeker through the guy who was sitting right to me because I was pretty sure, I was hoping he was not black, and then Bundy was black and got it.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, pretty lucky as well. It's just, like, hate drafting is only something you do when there's, like, if you're going to hate yourself more than you hate the card, like, if there's always good card, there's no reason to hate.
Okay. Even in team draft?
It depends on what you're hating. Like, if you're hating an insettable bomb, you should probably take it, like, you can never pass, like, but even if you pass something like Settle the Wreckage, you're going to know the other guy has it.
Okay.
So your team can play around it for the whole match, more or less.
Man, that must be, it feels like a lot to track, you know, and I don't have a lot of experience with team draft. So I'm assuming it's one of those things that as you do it more, you just get better at, you know, remembering all the stuff that you pass so you can talk about it with your team afterwards. But it just seems like a lot to track.
There is, and there's been some great moments in the past years where I was like, dude, why didn't you, did you know he had this? Yeah. Why didn't you tell me? I don't know.
Interesting. Oh, man. So fun. Man, so what was it like to be the champion of a Grand Prix with your teammates?
It was great.
Yeah?
It was actually insane. Man. Getting after that, not only to just winning, but you're winning with two of your best friends.
Yeah.
Man, that was. I played a lot of sport when I was younger, but this was something else. This was really good. It felt really, really good.
And what did it mean for you as a player? Did it set you up for anything? Like, is that where you got the points you needed for?
The points means to me that I unlocked silver by winning exactly.
Oh, wow. So by winning, you got like, exactly silver. That's kind of fun.
I got exactly silver, but it means something, but not that much. The fact that I got a trophy means a lot more.
Okay.
Playing with all the good cars on my team, like also playing with Team Genesis and Team Revelation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And everyone, like, we actually made it up. There haven't been a GP in the States or in Europe for so long where there wasn't one for the six guys from the team in the top eight.
Really? That's fun.
Yeah. Like Corey was just like, when was the last time there was a GP like where we played that someone didn't make the top? It's been a while.
But wow. Pretty solid like team.
It is pretty, like, obviously some of the best guys as well.
Yeah.
But winning one was, this is great. I have eight top eights. Six of them are in quarterfinals.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I love that. So in this year and a half, what is the biggest mistake that you've seen players make?
Keep thinking we order enough food.
What do you mean?
Every time we order food, we either order way too much or too little. It is the same. Like on the team, I'm a chef and I cook sometimes.
Oh yeah.
But also, like, we rent house and cooking for 12 people is a lot. And there's, like, I had to go out and borrow pots and pans when we were in Albuquerque so I could cook for the guys. I actually went to the neighbors in the suburbs, to borrow a pot to cook in.
Well, that's fun, fun new way to meet people. Like,
she looked at me like I was insane. And it was Halloween.
Oh, my. Was it really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we got trick or treat and we gave out canola bars. That was all we had.
That is really funny. That is really, really funny. So is there a mistake within the realm of magic? The biggest mistake that you've seen players make?
I don't think there's like one exactly mistake I can say that people keep making necessarily. I feel like underestimating your opponent sometimes is the mistake people make. It's like if you play GPs and stuff like that, you're sometimes just going to be like, I'm just going to try and do this. It might work. And it certainly is. Actually, one of the mistakes I've seen happening is people not killing Corey Baumeister at GPs. I don't get it. Multiple times, Corey come up to me like, I won because my opponent didn't see it.
Interesting.
So if you're playing Corey Baumeister, look down at your board and make sure that if you can kill Corey, kill Corey. Because I'm tired of hearing Corey keep telling me like story about him surviving by his opponent not killing him.
Not killing him.
It's just like having lethal on board and stuff like that and then just not going for it.
Interesting.
It's obviously not as simple as that, but...
Yeah, of course not. So underestimating your opponent, what have you done to not fall into that trap?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Sometimes you always like. Sometimes you're gonna win a match by saying, "All right, if my opponent see the right line, I can't win. So I'm just gonna try and go for it." We won a match at a team GP a long time ago, actually in Richmond, 5 years ago, and just right around when we met Brad, and we stayed in Roanoke with Brad and Todd Anderson, and we won a match where our opponent played the old Jace Memory Adept. The 5-mana one that can mill for 10.
Yes.
And he played turn 1 Llanowelf, turn 2 Scroll Thief, turn 4 that Jace. And we didn't play a single card.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any bombs or anything. We won by bouncing our opponent. We let him use it twice, then bounced it, his opponent with Disperse so we could head cancel up while he drew 4 cards with the Thief. And our only win was if he played it this turn into our cancel and just didn't draw any good spells for the rest of the game.
That's the plan. Love it.
That was the plan.
Yeah.
That was like, we could never beat anything. Like, even if he passed the turn and just said go, we could not win. But he played the Jace. We countered it. And then after he drove 5 cards with the Thief, we just started playing our creatures. And he just didn't do anything. And I was sitting there with Bundy yelling at each other because we never agree on anything when we play teams in general. And then we end up winning. And Brad was sitting next door like, holy moly, I have never seen a more retarded match. Because we were sitting screaming at each other and the other guy was just like looking furious like, what is going on in Danish?
Yeah, that must be an edge that you have at least, is you can talk with your teammates and chances of your opponents knowing what the heck you're saying is really slim.
Yeah, that is obviously like an advantage being from a non-English country.
Yeah.
Because everyone understands English.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's pretty cool. So we've kind of touched on what you've been up to the last year and a half and your biggest growth, biggest mistake that you've seen. What would you say are some of your shortcomings as a Magic player? What are you still working on to improve?
I want to be better at, actually, I don't know. Like, I like playing fast. I don't like dragging out the games either. So I make small mistakes sometimes by sometimes just playing too fast.
Yeah.
But I think it wins me more games than it loses me games. By having a certain tempo to play after.
So there's not really an incentive to change right now.
Like people say something like, why didn't you think about it? It's like, yeah, you're right. I could have but the way I play Magic is intuitive.
Okay.
Also, like you asked me last time, what is your best advice to be a better Magic player? And I was like, I don't know. Teaching people how to play Magic is not my most special skill.
Got it, yeah.
I don't really know how to teach people to have intuitive how to do stuff. It's like, if you don't know why, if you can't see why doing a certain play is better than not doing it, the reason why I can explain it could be like something the other guy did four turns ago where he attacked with his 1-1 or he didn't attack with the 4-4. So he probably doesn't have that card. And I think that is like one of the big part of magic. Like, understand why your opponent is doing what he's doing and sometimes bluff. Just bluff your way through.
Yep. Yep.
It will work sometimes.
Yeah, that is really cool. That's really fun. And so when you're traveling, and I don't know if we talked about this last time or not, but you know, for a month in the States, going to lots of different events, what do you take with you? You know, like you have to have a certain collection of cards with you to, you know, to play. So you just take everything and just, you know, it's a big old heavy bag of magic cards, or, you know, how?
It is definitely a big old bag of magic cards.
Okay. Yeah.
But depends on what we're playing. Like, for the last couple of seasons, it's been a lot more cards because there were so many cards in Standard.
Okay.
And for the Modern PT back in Atlanta, it was way too many cards.
Okay.
But mostly we just take, yeah, all the Standard cards, like maybe not all the commons and stuff like that.
Right.
Also, I buy 4 of each set all the time, so I have most of the cards.
Okay.
Which is just easier, and have a guy bring it to me to the PTs. For the new sets, always.
Okay. That's cool. So then you have a play set of everything, just in case.
Yeah, more or less. Sometimes some a little bit get lost and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's why you have a bunch of cars around your house.
It is one of the few things that amazes me all the time, that so good players don't actually own cards.
Mm-hmm.
Like many people on the team, it's just like they don't own any cards. The cards they own is the deck we played at the last PT, because they had to buy that.
Mm-hmm. And then what do they do with them? They like sell it afterwards, or?
No, they just keep it, like, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's just like they don't have like cards in general.
Yeah.
I don't get like how much magic people play, and then they don't have like cards in general.
It's like,
that is the reason why I started buying cards.
That you started?
I hate having to borrow cards all the time.
Mm. Yeah, got it. Have you seen any of the Rivals of Ixalan spoilers yet?
I've seen a few.
Did you see the Vraska and the other Planeswalker?
I actually didn't.
Yeah, I think it was just yesterday or whatever. Pretty crazy. Here, let me pull it up real quick. My brother sent it to me, which I thought was really nice. Because he's like, we play like super casually, and he's like, hey, look at this. I'm like, oh, good stuff. Hold on. It was some site that I'm like, I didn't know that site got previews or whatever.
I found it right here.
Okay. Yeah. What site was it on? I forget. But anyways.
Mythicspoilers.com.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, they have it, but, yeah, they have it. But anyway, so yeah, so it's pretty cool. Like, I was like, oh man, like Vraska's ult turns all your attackers into the assassins that, if they deal damage, the opponent loses the game, which is kind of cool. And then the other guy, the other Angrath or whatever. His ult was pretty nuts too. So.
Yeah, Angrath.
So it's pretty fun. Like, we're getting into that season. We're starting to, you know, get little hints here and there of what's coming. So that should be pretty fun.
Holy shit. Angrath's ult is insane.
Yeah, what destroy is it? What is it again?
Destroy all creature target opponent's control. Angrath Minotaur Pirate deals damage to that player equal to their total power.
That's it. Yep, that was it. I was like, wow, okay. So I hope they have a bunch of fatties. So, yeah, it was Polygon. So yesterday, my brother sent me a link to Polygon. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know Polygon got, you know, preview cards or whatever. But they had an article on the 5th that had some. So, yeah, so that's pretty cool. Obviously, if they have, like, 1-1, then that's not cool. But then again, you wouldn't ult at that point. But it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that they're coming out with some new stuff. So,
actually, the Planeswalker seemed kind of weak besides that.
In Ixalan? In general, yeah.
They're not that strong. I think they're trying to put the power level a little bit down, but Angrath is just like deal 1 damage to all your opponent's creature and that opponent, and his -3 is return a pirate card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Like, I don't know what there that, might come in some insane card cards.
Yeah, that's how he defends himself, I figure. You know, like some people make tokens or whatever, so he brings back, you know, a pirate, and so that's what I figured was his, how he defends himself. And you know what, now that you say that, there's not like, you know, a planeswalker, you know, control deck or something like that, like there was a couple years ago. So I guess the planeswalkers aren't. Yeah, I love Super Friends decks. Yeah, I guess there hasn't really been one, so they're really not that pushed right now. So that's cool.
And Razka's ability is give creatures you control +1/+0 and -3 destroy a creature.
Yeah.
I guess destroy a creature is pretty good, but...
Yeah, it reminded me of Obnixilis, except for she costs one more. Like, she's 6 mana and Obnixilis was 5, you know, and so it's
and Obnixilis 2 cards.
Yeah, that's true. He did. He did do that, so... Anyways, good stuff. So it's kind of fun. We're getting into that season and it'll be fun to kind of see, you know, what happens, what's new, and do all that, so...
I think the 6-mana dino, on the other hand, is completely insane.
The 6-mana who?
The 6-mana dino.
What does he do?
It is 1 black, reveal it from your hand, and put a prey counter on target creature. You can only use it as sorcery. And then it's 6-mana, 2 black, 4 colorless, 6/6 death touch. When it comes into play, destroy all creatures with a prey counter on it.
There you go. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That is something else.
It's pretty good. Well, fun stuff, man. It's been a lot of fun reconnecting and seeing what you've been up to and just, congratulating you on all your successes. Like, it was an awesome year and a half for you. And it's really fun that you have a lot more events lined up and gold is in sight. That's going to be really cool. And I wish you the best of luck. I want to remind the prodigies out there, while it's coming, you know, Christopher will be on Twitter soon because he said if he wins, he'll make one. But as of right now, not yet. So Facebook is the best place to connect with him. And as we kind of wrap things up, Christopher, what is a parting piece of guidance you have for us? Something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to do with us here at the end?
Don't ever slow roll your opponent unless it's Michael Magus.
Nice. And Christopher, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions. And thank you so much for coming back onto the show and sharing your stories and sharing what it's been like and the roller coaster you've been through with us. It's been a blast. And may you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, man. It's been great to be on the show again.
Christopher Larson, thank you so much, man. It was so good to have you back on the show. It was really fun. I love hearing what you have going on. And I just wish you the best of luck. So episode 265 is all done. Prodigies, you can get these show notes at mtgpro2.com/Christopher Larson 2, the number 2. Because, of course, without the number 2 will be his original show notes. So check that out as well. Thank you so much for joining me today. Hope you have a fantastic new year, that you get out there and do something fun and not too crazy, I hope. And I look forward to connecting with you again in 2018. And until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.